That was Labor Radio, Seattle correspondent Darren Hoop speaking with machinist David Clay. You can find the recording of tonight's program online at kboo.fm/laborradio. You can also find details about upcoming labor events on our Facebook page, KBOO Labor Radio. The annual Black Friday protests against Walmart, the PAT Solidarity Campaign, you can find it on our Facebook page, KBOO Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to help co-sponsor the Triangle production of American Fiesta, starring Gary Wayne Cash, a witty, hopeful tale of imperfection and acceptance. American Fiesta will take place at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. This Triangle production will run from November 29th through December 22nd. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in Wednesday at 9 a.m. for a special Political Perspectives show. Teresa Mitchell will interview Michael Kimmel, author of Angry White Men, American Masculinity at the End of an Era. Hear about Michael Kimmel's research interviewing a variety of angry white men, from white supremacists to men's rights activists to schoolboys, to try to figure out what makes them so furious. That's Wednesday at 9 a.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
KBOO is proud to present one of the greatest jazz films ever made, Round Midnight. Join us Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater for this 1986 American-French film that captured the Paris jazz scene of the 1950s. Watch jazz legend Dexter Gordon deliver an Oscar-nominated performance. Round Midnight, the Clinton Street Theater, Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m., 2522 Southeast Clinton.
In conjunction with KBOO's presentation of Round Midnight at the Clinton Street Theater, tune in Wednesday afternoon, December 11th, when KBOO Jazz host Rita Rega talks with bassist Chuck Israels about his experiences in the Paris jazz scene in the 1950s, playing with pianist Bud Powell, the real-life inspiration for the film. That's Wednesday afternoon, December 11th, between noon and 2 p.m. on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
Every Monday night at 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music. Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut? Here on KBOO Portland.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Welcome to another edition of Prison Pipeline.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. For
the audience, you are tuned to Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM here in the Portland, Oregon area. I'm your host, Peter Pincel. I'm lucky enough to be joined by Jeremiah Stromberg this evening. He is a Deputy Director of the Department of Corrections, and he can introduce himself a little bit more fully, I think. He will be speaking to us about House Bill 3194 this evening, and what it all looks like, what the future future holds. Jeremiah, why don't you take a second to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about where you're coming from.
Sure, Peter, and thanks for having me on the show tonight. I am the Assistant Director of the Community Corrections Division at the Department of Corrections. And so my responsibility is to oversee the funding, allocation, parole and probation services for the 36 counties. And that includes helping to develop policies, rules, new legislation as it relates to community corrections and our criminal justice practices.
Tonight's topic, we're talking about House Bill 3194. Could you introduce what we're even talking about right now?
Sure. So House Bill 3194 is the product of the Governor's Commission on Public Safety, which over the last 2 years, the governor had called together representatives of our public safety system, victims, defense attorneys, district attorneys, sheriffs, community corrections professionals to look at our public safety system and say, are we doing things the best way we can? Are they being done in the most cost-effective way? And the ultimate goal was to see, can we get equal or better outcomes by investing more resources locally to focus on criminal behavior, supervision on parole and probation, than we're getting by spending those dollars in building prisons, institutions, and continuing to incarcerate and house large populations.
So that's a big picture view of some real sweeping legislation in the criminal justice system. Can you give us some more specifics, maybe some more details around the timeline?
So during this last legislative session, the legislature in the spring of 2013 passed a series of recommendations that had come forward from the governor's commission, and those were captured into what we call House Bill 3194. And it included a number of different things from the front end of the criminal justice system, so changing sentences by reducing the prison sentence and taking some crimes and instead of having them as prison sentences, turning them into probation sentences. And then it also focused on the back end, so allowing inmates to transition back to the community earlier than they otherwise would be able to. And again, investing resources locally to see that there's a smoother transition back to the community and that community corrections has the tools they need in order to adequately supervise, sanction, and provide services to those that are returning to the community.
Jeremiah, give us 3 to 5 points on how to think about this bill.
Peter, if I were to sum up the bill in 3 to 5 points, I would say that this bill is focused on sentence reformation. So taking marijuana sentences and driving while suspended, and instead of incarcerating people in prison for those offenses, utilizing the probation system. Second, clearly identifying what are the needs of local communities. So Multnomah County gets to decide, what do we need to invest in to better equip and prepare those that are returning to our communities? Is it transitional housing? Is it drug and alcohol treatment? Is it a need to invest in jail beds locally? So each community gets to decide for themselves, where are our gaps? Do we have adequate victim resources? Do we have, like I said, adequate housing or just the other basic needs that those that have been incarcerated for a long period of time are coming back and don't have access to or are going to face numerous barriers in order to receive? I think it's also important to point out that this bill allows for the expansion of short-term transitional leave. So inmates are going to be allowed to return to the community 90 days earlier than they have been allowed to in the past. And so based on behavior while in the institution, adhering to their case plan, which means that they're going to the treatment classes and the education courses that are being offered to them, and then having an adequate and a viable plan back in the community, some resources that they're looking forward to, that they're doing some planning for, will allow them the opportunity to return back to the community. Along with that, House Bill 3194 allows those that are on probation to get off as early as 50% earlier than they otherwise would have. And again, it's going to be performance-based. Are they doing what the courts have required of them? Are they paying their restitution? Are they complying with the conditions that their parole officer is imposing on them? And if they're doing those things, they're potentially going to be eligible to serve a significantly less amount of time on supervision. The reason that this bill became a focus of attention for the legislatures and for the state of Oregon in general is that we recognized if we did nothing different, over the next 10 years, we would have to invest more than $100 million more dollars into the Department of Corrections. So we had a choice to make. Do you provide the agency that I work for an additional $100 million so that we can build another prison? Because at our current sentencing rates and incarceration rates, we are going to need another prison within the next 5 to 10 years. Or do we want to take a step back and look, is there a better use of taxpayer dollars? Is there a population that doesn't need to go to prison? Is there a population that can transition back to the community earlier? And what we found and what came out of the culmination of House Bill 3194 is that, yes, there are some deliberate steps we can take to reduce our prison costs and still get the same, if not better, outcomes in public safety.
Jeremiah, you mentioned releasing inmates early and allowing for early graduation from supervision. What do you want us to know about that?
Peter, the ultimate goal when we're releasing inmates early or when we're discharging folks from probation early is that we recognize if we need to focus our resources on those that present the greatest risk to our communities. And someone who's serving their probation or their parole and has shown compliance, they've completed treatment, we can see the action and motivation in them, that they're making good choices, that stability has returned to their lives, housing, employment, family. And when we've been able to observe those actions in motion over a period of time, it's time for us to focus our resources on those that are continuing to struggle or have made a choice that they're not going to change.
Sometimes you see that I'm mad. Don't you know no one alive can always be a letter when everything goes wrong? You see so bad. Oh, but I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Media matters. For most in prison, media doesn't mean what it means to millions of media consumers. They read newspapers, yes, and some watch TV, but what they read and see is something far different than others. For their voices, their perspectives are often missing from the tales told therein. Except for small newsletters such as Greater Friends or the Leon Williams Journal, there are few places open to publishing either the prose or poetry of prisoners. Greater Friends is a publication of the Pennsylvania Prison Society. And the Leon Williams Journal is a monthly publication put out by a Philadelphia attorney named Leon Williams. There are thus few challenges to the reigning ideology which supports and defends the notion of the burgeoning industry of mass incarceration. Unread by all but the few who know of such publications, prisoners' voices are silenced and their perspectives are easily ignored. This matrix of invisibility serves to strengthen the state's repressive apparatus, and such silence supports the out-of-sight, out-of-mind nature of American prisons. One wonders, how can several million people spending an eternity in chains and under the uncontrolled impunity of the state be invisible? Simple. Look at your TV. Scan your newspapers. When and where do you see prisoners? You see them going to court, chained like little Hannibal Lecters. You see them wearing ridiculous neon orange jumpsuits. You may see them in dramas, but rarely do you see them simply as human beings, speaking, thinking, being human. That's invisibility. That in the nation which is the largest incarcerator on earth. Isn't that incredible? Isn't that stunning? Land of the free, indeed. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
This is Peter Pincel for Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. We're here tonight with Jeremiah Stromberg, Assistant Director of the Department of Corrections Community Corrections Division. We're talking about House Bill 3194. Jeremiah, a topic that we need to discuss is recidivism. Can you define that for us?
I will share with you that after this last legislative session, the definition of recidivism has become a little bit more confusing if you were to open up the Oregon Revised Statutes to read it. But here's what I'll tell you. Historically and continuing forward, and if I speak on recidivism tonight, I am coming at it from the standpoint that recidivism is committing a new felony offense within 3 years of your release from prison or the start of your probation. That is how we have typically defined it in the state of Oregon. Now, statute also allows us to define it as any new arrest. It doesn't have to carry a conviction, and it may not even be an arrest for a new crime. It could be a technical violation of your parole or probation, and that we would call that recidivism. There's certainly a need to track that data. And so it's going to be very important going forward that when somebody is presenting a recidivism number or statistic, that we all are aware that it's clearly communicated what's the definition being used. We get to brag in the state of Oregon of having very low recidivism rates. Most folks in Oregon, 3 out of every 4, do not continue on to commit a new felony after they've served their prison sentence. That ranks us number one in the nation. That, I believe, is a culmination of our sentencing practices, our supervision practices, the way that judges use discretion around use of drug courts and specialty courts and treatment, and the fact that we have a system that believes that people can change, and we put our emphasis and our energy and our resources into helping that change process occur. And Oregon has had the outcomes to show for it. When I am comparing Oregon to other states, it is using the same definition. And we have had a number of external agencies that have evaluated Oregon's crime rates, and specifically those that have served parole or probation, and have compared it equally, apples to apples, if you will, with other states across the nation. And no matter how you cut that, Oregon comes out with having some of the best, if not the best, results in the nation.
So, Jeremiah, I imagine that House Bill 3194 faced some opposition anyway. Who came out against it?
In the end, House Bill 3194 had the support of all of the public safety partners, from district attorneys, community corrections, sheriffs, crime victim organizations, everyone who played a role in it. Now, certainly through the process of a bill that has so many components and pieces to it, there were areas where different agencies and organizations didn't agree. Certainly in deciding which sentences should be changed at the front end, for instance, was one that as a state we have wrestled with for a long time around what's the appropriate mandatory sentence someone should serve for a violent crime. That was a very interesting and heated topic of discussion through the development of 3194, as it should be. In the end, what you saw was a collaborative grouping of many of the public safety agencies, crime victim agencies that supported how do we save taxpayer dollars, how do we reinvest locally, and how do we still hold people accountable when they commit crimes against society.
Jeremiah, talk to us more about these reinvestment dollars.
So, Peter, within this bill, there's reinvestment dollars that are allocated out to all 36 counties. And each county gets a piece of that pie based on their felony population. So for Multnomah County, for instance, they make up 20%. They have 20% of the felons within the state of Oregon. Therefore, out of the $10 million reinvestment fund, Multnomah County gets approximately 20% of the dollars. As you move around the state, you have anywhere from 0.5% up to Multnomah County at 20% and everything in between. The decisions on how the money is being spent is to be made by the county commissioners of each county. Most counties are relying upon what's called their local public safety coordinating council. That's the local team that's invested in looking at local public safety practices, what's working, what isn't. So your law enforcement, your district attorneys, your parole and probation offices, your victim advocacy, your local attorneys, and citizens alike. Many of them are a part of public safety systems as well. And they make recommendations to their board of commissioners around, here's where we think the money could best be utilized. Ultimately, it's up to the commissioners to decide what is the best utilization of these dollars and how do we want to invest it. So the exciting thing about this is each county gets to tailor specifically to their county. So no two counties are going to look the same or are going to invest the same across the state.
And for more information on your county's local public safety coordinating council, who makes these decisions, please visit our website at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. And a link will be there, at least to the Multnomah County local public safety coordinating council webpage. So Jeremiah, talk to us about what this looks like on the street. Let's get away from this policy stuff.
So the way this looks on the street is that what you can expect as a resident in Multnomah County is that your expectation should be that locally, those that are on supervision are receiving the services that they need. That may be more intensive supervision. For those that aren't willing to make a change, it means that your county has adequately staffed their parole and probation offices or their local police departments. It also means that as men and women are transitioning out of prison, that the local county is considering what do they need to be successful, what sort of employment opportunities, and bringing in mentors to help with guidance and to navigate their way through a system that they may be unfamiliar with or haven't been part of a community for many, many years. It should be an expectation to the citizens within a county that there's an appropriate number of treatment opportunities and sanctioning opportunities. It should be an expectation to the citizens in a county that restitution is being collected for the crimes that have been committed and the impact on the community. The goal with this bill is that those areas can receive the necessary attention, oversight, and supervision that they need to be successful. And there should be an expectation that as a county, that we're sending the appropriate high-risk, dangerous people to prison, and those who are willing to make a change and who don't present as great of a risk, that we're investing in them today so that they can become one of us again tomorrow when they've completed their supervision.
Jeremiah, can you guess at any unforeseen consequences of House Bill 3194 in the near future that might not be positive?
When we think about House Bill 3194, it's hard to determine what the unforeseen impacts may be within the bill. What we do recognize is that everyone we're releasing, say, early onto 90-day transitional leave would be returning to the community within 90 days already. We're not releasing a population that would have otherwise remained incarcerated for a long period of time. With the sentencing reform on marijuana and driving while suspended charges, we're talking about a relatively small percentage of the population that now will stay local as opposed to going to prison. But even if they had gone to prison, they'd be returning to the community within a few short years. And so the balance still remains in check that allows us not to end up in a place where we have to build a new prison, but doesn't burden the local community to the extent that they don't have the resources to support the men and women who will be supervised here in the community. What we're seeing in Oregon right now is that we are continuing to further individualize our approach to sentencing, to release, and to supervision. And what I mean by that, Peter, is we are trying to recognize that not every drug offender is the same. Not every sex offender is the same. That we need to be able to determine what is the appropriate dosage of prison, what's the appropriate dosage of supervision, what's the appropriate dosage of treatment and intervention that we need to give to individuals. So that is why we rely on data and research. We want to make a focus that is driven on what's the best outcome for this particular individual. And in Oregon, we have a long history of being a data-driven state. So many of our decisions are made around what are the best practices. And while we've been on the cutting edge and the leading end of many of our public safety reform and approaches, it's because we rely upon not only our own good professional judgment and the structure and the history we've had, but we rely upon the new innovative techniques, research, and approaches that are coming out. Within the Department of Corrections, we have a commitment that everything we do, we are going to measure. And if we're not seeing the positive outcomes we want, then we're going to change it. So we're going to constantly look at how we are housing our inmates, what treatment we're providing them, and how we're transitioning them back to the community to determine, is our approach the best approach? And if it isn't, then we better change it.
This sounds like a much bigger topic than we have time to discuss tonight, Jeremiah. Is there someone that we could talk to about this a little bit more fully?
Well, I think this is an exciting time, Peter, and that so many of our public safety partners are engaged in this conversation, that many of us are spending our days and looking at how we're going to implement House Bill 3194. So I would certainly encourage this show to get a broad perspective of what the impact is going to be. So I would encourage you to reach out to the Criminal Justice Commission for some very specific data and numbers. I would encourage you to invite representatives from our district attorney's offices or from directly out of the parole and probation offices to talk about impact and implementation, really, at this point, as it relates to this bill. When I meet with inmates, I want to always encourage them, and I try to always encourage them to remember that transition back to the community is something they need to work on each and every day. From the minute they step through the institution doors, they need to begin living for the day they're going to be on the outside. 97% of all of our inmates are coming home, and they need to be working just as hard as we are on the outside to prepare for that release, to save money, to take advantage of the programs and education that's available to them, and to be prepared, motivated, and ready to work extremely hard when they come back. But that there are many of us who are working equally as hard to ensure that they're successful upon their return.
Jeremiah Stromberg, Assistant Director of the Department of Corrections Community Corrections Division here in Oregon. He's been speaking with us about House Bill 3194. This is Peter Pincel for Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon. Listen to this and past shows on our website, kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Tune in the coming weeks when we speak to other representatives about House Bill 3194 and what it's looking like as they implement it. If you like us, take a second to like us on Facebook. And tune in next week to hear Karen James speaking about checking the box. Have you ever been convicted of a felony? Thank you to our engineer, Danielle. Thank you to KBOO for making this all possible, and thank you very much to our audience this evening for tuning in. Have a great evening.
Baby, you understand me now.
If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. You know, sometimes, baby, I'm so carefree, with a joy that's hard to hide. And then sometimes again it seems that all I have is worry. And then you're bound to see my other side. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. If I seem edgy, I want you to know I never mean to take it out on you. Life has its problems, and I get more than my share. But that's one thing I never mean to do, 'cause I love you. Oh, baby, I'm just human. Don't you know I have faults like anyone? Sometimes I find myself alone regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. 'Cause I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard.